My name is Julie Turney, and this is the HR Sound Off podcast show, the show created for HR and business professionals to discuss pertinent topics and trends as it relates to our professions. We're going to have amazing conversations with HR professionals from all over the world, get to learn their origin stories, how did they get into this profession, what do they love about being here, and how they want to set the record straight on that one misconception that really drives them crazy about our profession. Are you ready? I'm ready. Then let's sound off. Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of HR Sound Off. My guest today, not necessarily in the HR space, as in has a title of HR pro, but definitely an inspiration for us as HR professionals. I have been following our guest for some time. I can't even remember how long, but it's been long. And one of the things that made me go a little bit deeper was during lockdown, while we were all locked down, trying to figure life out, he created some amazing content to kind of help me get through lockdown. I must admit that. And some of it was funny. A lot of it very insightful and very inspirational. But I am going to stop talking about him because I need to give him an opportunity to talk about himself. We're going to have an interesting conversation. I know you guys are going to love it. Welcome to the Sound Booth today, Galen Emmanuel. Galen, how are you?
I'm so great. I'm so excited about being on this podcast and connecting with you. And just, you're so lovely.
Oh, thank you.
I like being able to see your face and your lovely smile. And I'm just like, yes, I'm excited about being here and diving into, you know, wherever, whatever we end up diving into. And I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here, feeling grateful to be able to join you. So thank you for having me.
Oh, you are absolutely welcome. I'm just glad that you said yes. Like when I reached out and you actually said yes, I was like, wow, okay, we're going to have a great conversation. So thank you so much for being here. I know that we're on completely different time zones. It's like 2:07 here. I'm sure it's like early in the morning for you. So I thank you for taking the time to get up on your Sunday to have this conversation with me.
I love it. It's a treat.
Cool. So let's just start off from the beginning. Tell our amazing audience, who is Galen Emmanuel and how did you get here?
Okay. Man, such a long story. Where do I start? Well, a couple, I guess, random thoughts, things about me. I was originally born in Vancouver, Canada. So I'm Canadian. I live in Portland, Oregon. And how did I get into doing this work? The quick version is my sort of business background is always been in sales and marketing and entrepreneurship and leadership kind of stuff. That's always been something I'm very, very curious and love. And at one point I started doing improv as well. So I started doing improv, teaching improv classes, performing and doing that work. Mm-hmm. And at one point I became the marketing and sales director for the improv theater that I was performing and teaching at. And also just because I'm just such an entrepreneur in my blood and my bones, when I got that job, I started doing some of this work. Originally, that's kind of where this came from in terms of what I do with teams. So starting to, you know, I just saw a lot of crossover and value of, you know, I've been teaching improv for years and I speak business and I, you know, very just leadership and teams. And so I just saw a lot of opportunity where, you know, the same skills and principles and concepts and tools in improv, you know, how valuable those were to just human connection, interaction, emotional intelligence, self-awareness, impact. And so I started putting on classes and developing curriculum to teach skills to you know, business people and leaders around that. And I, you know, it just sort of escalated from skill building into like talking about culture and how like whole organizations operate together. So kind of a long story, but that's how I got into this. It was really organic. I was never like, I want to go do training with teams and become and do a speaker and do conferences and keynotes, but it just sort of evolved into that. And I love it. I love everything about all of this.
It shows in every single thing that you do, Galen. Like there's nothing that I've ever seen with you putting your content out there or a speak talk that you've done where you're not totally 100% engaged, fully believing everything that you're saying. And I absolutely, you know, absolutely love it. And I know you, I've seen you speak at SHRM. I know you did the Bamboo HR Summit recently. And I know that you're always speaking in different places all the time, but your company, Shift Yes, what made you call your company Shift Yes? Like, I've read so much about it, but for our audience who predominantly is from the Caribbean that may not be familiar with you and your content, your company, tell us a little bit about behind the name Shift Yes.
Okay, so essentially it's sort of two pieces. One, you know, because originally the way I got into this work was through improv and improv principles and practices, and everything in improv is centered around this very core concept idea of yes and. That's the meat and potatoes of all things improv. And so so the yes comes from that, and just that sort of mindset of being open and receptive to new ideas, being open to change, thinking about how we impact other people around, you know, looking for ways to say yes, not necessarily saying yes no matter what, but being open and flexible and adaptive and recognizing the impact that we have on other people when we try to say yes to them, and just some of those pieces. So that's where the yes comes from, and the shift being just, you know, just transforming people's mindsets, their skill sets, just like a shift into a different type of operating together as individuals, as organizations, as teams, as leaders. And so just that is kind of, that's where the name came from. Just like a shift to that, you know, to a more positive, more intentional kind of mindset and skill set around impacting other human beings.
Yeah, I am there for all of that. I totally love the concept. And I actually took a look at your manifesto, and like, I so much love the fact that you are in tune to your customers, but also in tune to your employees. So like the philosophy of what your company stands for is not just what you stand for within your team, your core team, but also what you emanate towards your clients as well. So one of the things that you talk about in your manifesto is like listening intentionally. Why is that so important as you lead and develop a team?
Yeah, I mean, listening is kind of the cornerstone to relationships, right? It's feeling listened to and feeling heard. And I think that listening as a, you know, as a skill set is so vital to everything that we do. And I think that, you know, when it comes to being an exceptional leader, or just even being an exceptional colleague, right? A team member or a partner or friend or in a relationship with someone else, your ability to skillfully listen to someone else and kind of what that entails is so crucial to success, right? Of building strong relationships, you know, of connection between people. And I think that, you know, for me, it goes beyond, you know, we talk about like active listening and those types of things. And I think it's really skillful. I think it's skillful listening. I think it's, you know, beyond how do you listen to somebody isn't just hearing what they have to say. It's making someone feel listened to. And if that's your intent, when you're showing up in a conversation or when you're showing up as a leader, you know, you just, you behave differently when your intention is, I want to make sure that you feel listened to by me, which means I'm asking questions. I'm letting you finish. I'm not interrupting, things like that. But it's just that intention, I think, shifts our behavior. And I think that that's a really key part of that. But yeah, of course, listening, people feeling listened to as employees, as team members, right? The importance of asking for feedback is part of that, right? It's not just, it's not, listening isn't just waiting for you to say something and hearing it. It's also coming to you to give you a voice, to empower you to say, hey, how am I doing as a leader? How am I doing as a colleague? How are we doing as an organization? Is there any way that we can make your experience better? Mm-hmm. And so part of listening is also actively going out and, you know, asking for people's voices, right? It's asking for people to share.
And I know that that's something that a lot of organizations have a problem with. It's one of the many reasons that we experience disengagement, because people don't feel heard. They don't feel like their voice is valued. So when we do listen with intent, then we get people feeling more engaged and more focused and feeling respected, which is what we're trying to achieve as an organization. So you work with some very big clients. Like when I look at the clients that you work with, Microsoft, Expedia, companies like that. What is one of the main reasons that at one point a person decides, okay, I need your service? What's happening in the organization by the time people are calling you and asking you for help?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that, you know, everywhere that you go, human beings are human beings. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the dynamics and intricacies of human beings working together in a workplace or on a team sort of, you know, there's kind of like common threads, right? Very universal dynamics that exist in there, because especially inside an organization or team, you need diversity. So you have different skill sets, different mindsets, different communication styles, different working styles, different backgrounds. And so, you know, even people that do an exact same similar job, they're different. And so because of those differences, because of, you know, just the dynamics of putting humans together in a workplace and saying, okay, accomplish this thing together, you know, you get, I think we see the natural kind of, you know, symptoms of humanity, which is people, you know, not communicating well, or, you know, so your question directly was kind of like, what's happening inside a team organization to bring me in? A lot of times it's just the symptoms, I think, of not having a really clearly defined culture. And so the things that you see are high retention, you know, silos, or sorry, low retention, high turnover, silos between departments, breakdowns of communication, personality conflicts, you know, reluctance to change, you know, just people that are feeling disengaged, et cetera. And so the kind of common symptoms that people see in HR, and if people are in HR, that you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's what are the challenges that we have as an organization of being successful, having really cohesive, high performing teams, and people that are really engaged. And so it's everything on the other side of that can happen. And you know, and for me coming in to work with an organization, a lot of circumstances, sometimes it's because, well, we've had the same kind of leadership for a long time, and the CEO or these, you know, certain people left and somebody new came in, and they really want to like turn things around and create more of a positive culture. They're sort of like waking up to the importance of really prioritizing employee experience and culture. And so, you know, it's just a lot of times it's kind of like what, you know, either in training and skills or in training and sort of like, how do we approach culture in a really tangible way? How do we really actually change people's behaviors inside the organization in a really positive, productive way? And so, you know, I think that people approach me to say, we know you do that. We know you can do that. So come in and help us. And, you know, and so part of that is, you know, developing skills, teaching people how to give and receive feedback more effectively and skillfully, or how to navigate conflict, how to communicate better, you know, increasing self-awareness and emotional intelligence, but certainly also like help us create a really intentional, fantastic culture here. So yeah, all those reasons, all the things that I can never, ever shut up about, because I love, I love this. I love any and all topics that have to do with just human beings being better to each other and more successful as teams and individuals. So yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that we kind of exist in the same space where we talk about wanting that human experience and wanting to bring out the best in people in their roles every single day, like helping to ignite people and make them feel engaged and involved. And when you're doing that, then you're doing something that you really love, right? I wish people could actually see the brightness on our faces right now, because we're talking about something that we both truly love to do when it comes to engaging in the workplace. So definitely I feel like that's very, very important, and what you're doing is key. Now, if you're going to organizations offering this service, because I think this is one of the questions that one of my members of the audience had a couple of days ago, how do you make that difference between being a consultant offering this service versus not being an HR professional? Because, you know, a lot of times people feel like when you bring a consultant in to take care of this particular situation or help with a particular situation, sometimes HR professionals can feel a bit threatened by that. Not necessarily that you're coming to take their job, because as far as you're concerned, you're going in to fix the problem and then you're moving on to the next client. But how do you help put HR professionals at ease as you go in and work with the organization?
Yeah, no, that's a great question and interesting dynamic. I think it's really more about partnership, right? It's not a competition. There is no threat to have somebody else come in. You know, I have, I don't know everything about everything, but the things that I'm really passionate about, that I'm excited about, you know, it's like I have a lot of really valuable knowledge in these areas that I can help. So I really see it as a partnership. You know, it's that, and I think it's a lot of that has to do with setting people up for success. I never, if I'm going in to work with a team for half a day or, you know, on an ongoing basis, I never want it to be, here's this fun time with Galen, now good luck, go take care of it, right? And so I think it's providing a lot of resources, providing a lot of tools of like, here's how to carry this forward. This is how to make this so that this is a permanent change for you. And you know, that it's giving, it's just being a partner that is in service of their success, right? And so it's giving them the tools, giving them the, you know, everything that they need to be able to carry this forward and staying connected. I love to stay in touch and how's it going and follow up and, you know, make sure that the work that I'm doing is having the impact that, yeah. Right. It's like, if somebody's bringing me in, it's like, I am my number one kind of currency is impact. I want to make sure that it works. I want to make sure that they're successful. So, you know, and I think that a lot of times HR is the function that's bringing me in. They saw me at a conference. They saw my content. They've been following me for a while. They kind of know my voice and what I talk about and my, you know, how I approach things. And so, you know, usually it's not, I'm brought into a company and now it's like, I have to meet with HR. Generally HR is kind of, they're the people who, you know, training development. They're like, yes, we need this. And we don't necessarily have the capacity inside the organization or the team to be able to be this. And also, you know, a lot of times I think this also resonates with leaders and HR people is that, you know, a lot of times an outside voice, sometimes people can only hear things outside of the echo chamber of inside the organization, right? Yeah. Where employees have this like, oh, of course you're going to say that because you're here. So somebody else coming in to say, hey, this is really common in organizations. These things, these dynamics, these challenges that you're having are, you know, this is common stuff. It's normal, but this is not unique to you, what you're experiencing. And here's how to fix this. Here's how to correct. Here's how to just be more excellent together. And so I think sometimes that outside voice is really important because we just naturally, I think that's just another dynamic of human beings that having that like outside, here is somebody that like specifically has a deep knowledge in this content, right? Around this content, around these challenges and bringing them in is helpful to like add tools. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I never usually feel like there's that competition or threat or any tension there with HR. It's more like, how can I make sure that you are really successful in this process and bringing me in that like this lasts forever? So yeah.
That's a great answer. And I hope that everyone in the audience recognizes that when you bring in consultants, it's not just, they're not there to take your job. They're there to help you fill a gap. They're there to give you an external perspective and support you and partner with you. So thank you so much for answering that. Yeah. Next, I have to ask you this. So outside of all of these amazing things that you do every single day in terms of giving content, supporting people, I know you mentioned before you do improv. So I did mention to you before that one of the things I saw in your lockdown content that really impressed me was your multi-characters. Pick your lockdown character.
Oh yeah.
And you did it in video game mode. It was just absolutely hilarious to me. What makes you, I guess your love for improv is what makes you put out stuff like that, but what made you in particular think to do that?
We had seen so for anyone that doesn't know what you're talking about, there was like a choose your quarantine player kind of thing where there's like, it's like a video game style and different costumes. So we had seen that one or two places and I was like, oh, I love video games and I just love weirdness. And so I was like, this seems fun. And my team was, I actually think it might've been my team that was the one that suggested it to be like, we should do one of these. It was probably Emily on my team or Jay. And I was like, yes, absolutely. So I was like, I've got a bunch of different weird costumes at the house. Let's do that together. One of the nice things, you know, my team is absolutely phenomenal. They are the most lovely, hardworking, dedicated human beings on the planet. But I'm also very lucky to have, you know, Jay, who's my video guy. So, you know, his editing skills. And so my team is very phenomenal. So but any chance to do something weird or funny or goofy, I think we try to take advantage of that in the weekly videos that I put out as well, just to like have fun.
Yeah.
And I think when I, you know, for a long time of running this business and starting to put out content, I was like, I put out a lot of content. It's valuable. But I was like, there isn't enough of me in it. Yeah. Like, this is my personality. Like, I'm a weird guy. And I'm like, some of these topics are really serious, but it's like, how can we add some levity and some fun to this? Just that, like, and my team has so much fun together. So I was like, how do we, I just intentionally, we were like, we want to make things that we put out also be fun to watch.
Yeah.
And not just like, here's this HR. So here's talking about communication and da da da. Like a lot of that can be so boring. So even when you're talking about serious stuff, it's like, how can we make this weird and fun and bring out like just personality? And I'm a weird sort of gregarious outgoing person and I have a, you know, creative weird mind. So I love to just add that because, you know, I think a lot of times people are self-conscious about that. If I show too much of me, then it'll be a put off. And I'm like, I don't really care. I like, there's lots of people to follow. So if you don't love the things that I do, if my weirdness doesn't match with you, it's like there's lots of content out there. So I always think it's a matter of like, you know, be you and have people just be like, I resonate with this, you know, and have people that think it's fun. So, you know, I'm never afraid to do something weird because I'm always like, ah, let's just do it. It seems fun. So.
Definitely. Well, here's your number one fan. If no one's ever called themselves that, you definitely love your content. So keep on being funny and weird. So I love it.
Thank you.
Carry on. Brings a smile to my face every single time.
Wow.
So I appreciate it very much. Keep on doing you. So let me ask you this, Galen. You have a very small team. Is that by purpose? Like there's four of you, right? Is that on purpose?
It's, you know, in terms of the production, the size of my organization, it's on purpose. I've always sort of, once I get to capacity, if we really need to focus on this other thing and we can't do it internally here and like add someone else. So, it's not on purpose that my team is that size necessarily. It's the perfect size team for what I do. So having someone to handle, you know, carry on my team, all operations and train on tracks kind of stuff. Jay is my video guy and editing, and Emily does all things digital, so our website and social media kind of stuff. So, and graphics and graphic design. So, you know, if I had to do all of those things as well, there would never be enough time to do all, travel around and do training and speak and all this stuff. So, we're kind of the right size. I always wait till things are kind of bursting at the seams to be like, okay, we need another set of hands here. Right. But yeah, and it's been really interesting. I think that also, you know, over the years of building teams, being able to be a leader, put a lot of the stuff that I talk about into practice and sort of seeing those things really play out and gaining a lot of insight from that too. You know, a lot of my dealing with organizations and HR people and having like hundreds of conversations with different teams and dynamics and things that are going on and helping them sort of like sort those out. And to have a team as well to see a lot of that stuff play out in real time. It's like, you know, when I talk about creating culture and how you integrate that into what you do and putting those systems into place and seeing, you know, seeing in real time on my team the impact that some of these things have, right? Our own, you know, the ShiftYes DNA code, our leadership, our sort of like our culture code that we have and like how we reinforce that and talk about it. So it's really nice to see the things that I talk about in practice and the places where like I have, you know, also made a lot of mistakes or failed as a leader and in hiring and just different, just those different pieces of it are, it's great. I love being a leader. I love being able to be the leader that I've always wanted and that I talk about and put that into practice and see it play out. And it's good. I think that's probably one of the most rewarding parts of building a business is being able to have a team and lead that team and to see how they operate together. And it's lovely. So four is the right size for right now. I think depending on, you know, as time goes on, as we get bigger and do different things, I think we'll grow. But four is a really good size for now.
Awesome. Yeah. So you just mentioned about being the leader you have always wanted to be, because I think as you go into organizations and you work with leaders, you are helping them to be the best that they can be. For you as a leader, leading a team, like, it's important that you live that as well, because obviously what you're transferring to other organizations, people should see in you as well. And for your team and how you interact on a daily basis, what does that look like for the ShiftYes team?
In terms of how we interact
on a daily basis, what's a day like in the life of the ShiftYes team?
What's a day? Let's see. Jay is usually editing like the latest batch of videos that we have and putting things together. Emily is scheduling, doing social media kind of stuff. Carrie is, you know, contracts, setting up alignment calls and dealing with, you know, inquiries that come in through our website or, you know, just following up with clients that we've worked with or that, you know, that we're, you know, a lot of times someone will contact us. It takes months to actually sort of like put something together, so you know she's usually handling those kind of things, and then I just have an unending list of emails and tasks and things that I need to get to and calls to make. So we communicate a lot over Slack, so that's the channel that we use, that we have different channels for different stuff so that we can stay connected and communicate really well, especially now during, you know, sort of during quarantine, because we're all fully remote the whole time. But you know, once a week we have our our team check-in on Thursday mornings. Everybody like just gives a check-in how they're doing, gives a highlight. And then, you know, once a month we do our monthly jams. So that's, you know, we come together, we take a half day as a team and we give each other kudos. We talk about the ShiftYes DNA code, which is our kind of culture code as a team. Each of us share kind of what we're doing really great right now, our biggest area of opportunity. So, you know, we communicate a lot. We sort of keep in touch. And so, you know, every day, usually we'll like hop on a call with Carrie or Emily and just like chat about different things and moving things forward and as different projects are coming together. It's actually really busy. I always feel like people look and be like, what do you do all day long? What does your team do all day long? We are not idle. There's a lot of things going on. So that's kind of a typical day in the life. I'm trying to check in, make sure each of them are kind of supported, that they have what they need, that, you know, if they need anything from me and just questions. But they're so reliable and dedicated and awesome. So they kind of, you know, they're a lot on kind of autopilot. They're all very capable, amazing people, and like they handle all their stuff. It's certainly never me checking in to make sure that they're doing what they need to be doing. That, like, that's an automatic. Yeah. If anything, they're checking in with me, making sure that I'm doing what I need to be doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fun. Even on our Slack channel, we have a kudos channel. So people give each other shout outs for like, oh man, this graphic came out, or this, you know, this YouTube title cover came out and like Emily did this and it looks amazing, and like kudos on that, or Jay finished up this huge video and all these edits and it looks amazing. So we have a kudos channel, and we have a random channel where people post memes and funny stuff, and you know, we have a lot of fun as a team. So
that's
your question was day in the life, but
that's great because you're also giving an insight into your culture, which sounds to me like you have a great culture, and that's one of the things that I know is very important to you and very important, should be very important for all of us as HR professionals, because many times people say culture sits with HR, but it doesn't sit with HR. It's everyone's business, and it sounds to me like HR is everyone's business at ShiftYes, as it should be. But you also give people the opportunity to have the psychological safety that they need in order to be who they are. Also creating autonomy. So those are very important things. So it's great to see and or hear that that's how you guys are operating as a team.
Yeah.
Here comes the hard question.
Okay.
So what keeps Galen Emanuel up at night?
What keeps me up at night? Man, I sleep like a baby. I get my head down on the pillow. I fall asleep right away. I sleep through the night. There's not a lot that keeps me up. I mean, you know, this time of, you know, challenge with quarantine, I know for a lot of people that are in my space that are speakers, you know, a lot of obviously in-person conferences kind of came to a screeching halt. People aren't doing those. You know, we immediately, you know, for me, I was like, I don't want to lay off anybody on my team. I don't, you know, I know things are like, it was like, we have to like foot on the gas. Let's keep going. Let's pivot. So we've like switched, I've created a lot of new content that's for virtual delivery. So I've been doing a lot of virtual sessions with like previous clients and other people in conferences, giving keynotes that are, you know, virtual and adapting content and stuff too. So it's just been a time of like a lot of innovation for us and moving up to create digital courses and digital training and stuff to keep things going. So, you know, there's always nervousness if you are a business owner, right? Worried about, and I'm not ever worried about the business. Just my people. It's just my team. I was like, I don't want to lay anybody off. I want it, you know? And so it was like, let's just like be strong. Let's keep going. Let's like pivot. Let's innovate. Let's do what we need to do to like provide value. And so, you know, if there's anything that ever keeps me up at night, it's that. It's like worrying that, you know, that our pipeline stays full, that there's lots of gigs coming in, like everybody can just like get paid. And that, you know, that hasn't been an issue at all. But if there's anything I worry about, it's just my people. It's that they're healthy, that they're safe, and that they're doing well. But we communicate really well. We talk a lot. And I think there's always an opportunity for us to like be vulnerable and share. And my team is, they're so good to each other. This is human beings. And that's important. So that would be probably the only thing. When it comes to business and all that kind of stuff, I'm an entrepreneur. I have a very growth mindset. I'm like, you know, we'll always be successful. There's like always something else that we can do and be, you know, I never worry about that stuff. Cause I'm just like, it doesn't matter what it is. I'll just go for it, make it happen. Like find a way, be scrappy and So I don't know. I worry about anything. It's my team, but they've been amazing and no cause for losing sleep. So I sleep
That's
like a
good.
baby.
Well, I wish you many sweet dreams.
Thank you. Thank you.
When it comes to leadership and culture, what are the two pieces of advice that you would have for HR professionals as they work with their organization to build a great people-first culture? What advice would you give?
Oh man, you just cracked open Pandora's box in my brain. So I will try not to take up too much time.
No
culture
problem.
Is my number one thing. If
know.
There's anything I want to scream from the rooftops about teams and leadership and culture and HR, it is around culture and some thoughts that I have there in terms of like why it matters, what culture really is. Culture gets talked a lot about, thrown around. It's, you know, for a lot of people, it's a buzzword. It doesn't mean anything. And what I see is that the way that organizations think about culture, the way they talk about culture is not specific enough. It's like most of what people understand about culture is incomplete in terms of not just what it is, but how you do it inside an organization. So if you, I would like to talk about that, like how it's done. I'll be quick. This is culture. Okay. Culture is not a ping pong table in the break room. It's not that people get along. It's not that we, you know, when we talk about culture with leaders and organizations, a lot of times that conversation kind of devolves into the golden rule. People say, well, just treat people the way you want to be treated. And right. And just, you know, culture happens one conversation at a time and there's no secret recipe to culture. You just sort of like, you know, and I hate hearing those things because it's not true. If we said that about any other function of the organization, if we said that about marketing, or we said that about sales or operations, like, oh, there's no secret sauce to sales. You just kind of build great products and you like close deals. You'd be like, what are you talking about? There's a deep strategic psychology between everything having to do with sales, everything having to do with marketing, everything in business that we want to get right. We highlight, we prioritize as a strategic priority, and we approach it in a really tangible, tactical way. And I think what I see in organizations is not that they're bad, it's just that skill is missing. The skill set of how do you create culture that's really intentional inside an organization is missing from the tool belt of most organizations, because we know that great culture is important,
right?
And we know what toxic culture feels like,
right?
But how do we do it? How do you create a culture that is right, that is basically a clearly articulated code of conduct and set of behaviors that's collectively understood, that people adhere to, that people are committed to, that we hold ourselves and each other accountable to, and that we're consistent with.
Right.
And that is what most organizations don't know how to do. And so you can't learn that. You can get an MBA in any business school in the universe, and you will never have a class or course to be like, this is how you create organizational culture. There isn't a course that is like, this is how it's done. And so when you ask, if you get 50 business leaders in the same room or 10 and ask them, how do you create culture? None of them will say the same thing. And so there's a lack of common language. There's a lack of common understanding. So first of all, what I want to say is this: the goal of focusing on culture is not to have a great culture, right? The same way that like the reason for owning a car is not to own a car. The reason that you own a car is so that you can drive anywhere that you want to go when you want. Culture is not the end goal. It is a delivery system. What we want in organizations, right, is for the people that are executing our business plan to be high performing, highly engaged, right, to function well, to get along together, to communicate well, right? We want high retention. We want to keep... we want to attract and keep high quality, high caliber employees and people. We want creative, innovative, diverse teams, right? Where people share and they feel listened to, and right, where they try hard, they show up to work and they care and they perform well. That's what we want. And culture is the delivery system to achieve that. That's all it is. And it's a system. It's a method of like, how do you accomplish that? So I want to talk about this because people say, cool, that's great. Yeah. But like, how do you do it? This is how you do it. And I'll keep it. I'll be quick. I can talk about this for all day long, but this is how it's
done.
I feel
like we need to do a part two, but you carry on. You carry on.
Part two. All right. You put a quarter in me. So here we go. I love it. Okay. This is how it's done. Most organizations, this is how they approach culture. They have a mission statement. They have a list of values like trust and integrity and respect and teamwork and excellence. And you'd be like, that's our culture. And I'm like, no, it's not. Because that does not impact the way people behave. It doesn't. Those are concepts. It's an idea, the idea of respect, but it's not, it doesn't mean the same thing to every person. If you ask 10 people what that looks like, they'll give different answers. So what you have to do to actually create a culture is kind of like the approach that I have is like the three C's of creating culture, which is number one, clarity, number two, commitment, number three, consistency. And what each of those mean is this. Number one, clarity. You have to create a very clearly articulated set of ground rules. You have to create a code of conduct that are not values, but behaviors. How do people show up here in this culture, right? Mm-hmm. So when we say, when we say respect, it doesn't, right? It's hard to enforce that. It's hard to, right? It's not clearly articulated. So what we have to do is unpack into behaviors. What does respect look like? Right. So for example, if you say, we treat each other with respect, cool. But an actual culture, an actual ground rule is saying we don't badmouth or gossip about other people in this organization. Mm-hmm. If you have a problem with somebody else, you go right to the source and you solve it with them. That's a behavior. And I can look at anyone on my team and I can say they do or don't exhibit this behavior. Right. But when I say respect is our culture, that means something different to every employee, every leader. It's impossible to sit someone down and say this behavior is disrespectful because that's an interpretation, right? Exactly. It's like, and so it's easy for employees who are lower accountability kind of people, right, that do exhibit poor performance or poor behavior to shuffle off ownership of that and say, you're just picking on me. You just don't like me. Mm-hmm. But if our culture says you don't badmouth about other people here and you see that happening, you can sit down with someone and say, hey, this very clearly defined behavior doesn't fly here. Yeah. We need to talk about this. Right. And so
drill down. It's not certain.
Yes. Yes. It has to be based in behaviors and mindsets. Right. So even with excellence, people say, well, excellence, well, what does that mean? But if part of your culture says, we don't see feedback from others as a threat. We see it as an opportunity. And we actively seek out feedback on a regular basis.
Yeah.
I can look at every employee in a hat and say they do or don't do this. And right. And so like it's so much that is the first piece and it's missing. Yeah. And when I talk to leaders and organizations, they say, well, we have this team that performs well, or we have this very toxic person or these things. Right, or like challenges of symptoms of behaviors or poor performance. And my first question is always, do you have a very clearly articulated code of conduct? And no, the answer is always no. Yeah. And I'm like, the reason that you're even dealing with that is because you don't have that. Because as soon as you have that established, you integrate it into everything you do, from hiring and onboarding, training and development, feedback and coaching. This clearly articulated code of conduct and ground rules for how we show up here together. And right, when it's so clear and we integrate it into what we do, we don't have to deal with as many of these sort of like performance and behavior issues because it's very clear to us. We understand this is the target. This is who we are. This is how we show up together. Yeah. So that's number one, is that clarity, right?
Right.
Number two is commitment. And this for organizations is that you as a leadership team, because it has to start at the top, you have to answer the question of, does this apply to every single person across the board in this entire organization? Or is there anyone that's exempt from acting in alignment with this culture?
Yeah.
And it has to be 100%. If anyone in the organization is exempt from having to act in alignment with your culture and this code of conduct, it's garbage.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything because it is your employees will see your culture for what it is, which is an internal marketing ploy to keep people in line. And it's garbage. It has to apply to every single person across the board, no matter what your role is. I don't care if you're the CEO. I don't care if you're on the executive team and you work here for 25 years.
Yeah.
You are as accountable to uphold these behaviors
as everybody else.
As a person who's been here for 3 days on the front line.
Yeah.
That's it. And there is it cannot be 99.9%. It's everybody or nobody. And like that level of commitment. And also saying like, how do we hold each other accountable to this? Like, and that question is challenging for teams, but it's like, if somebody shows up out of alignment with this culture and this code of conduct repeatedly, can they lose their job? Or, right? It's like, do we actually mean this? And answering that question, and it has to be yes. Yes, you can lose your job. This is there's only one way to be here. And it's these positive, very intentional ways of showing up and impacting other people on the team and how you approach your work.
Yeah.
And like that piece of commitment, right? And accountability. Yeah. And when we say accountability, a lot of times we think of that as being punitive, right? If you don't do these things, you're going to get fired. You're going to lose your job. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true, right? There isn't a sense of accountability.
More to it than that.
Consequences. But when I think of accountability, I think about it as commitment.
Yeah.
We are 100% committed to this as an organization across the board.
Right.
And it's that. It's right. It's not just that we're a bunch of like prison wardens, like policing people's behaviors. It's we are committed to this as an organization. This is the only way to be here.
Yeah.
And that applies to me as much as anyone else in this organization.
Right.
And the third piece, consistency, which is how do we integrate that? How do we, you don't want to create a poster, print it out, put it on the wall and forget about it. How do you integrate your culture into hiring and onboarding, feedback and coaching, right? Training and development,
yes.
Rewards and promotions. Like how do you integrate it into the DNA and fabric of your organization? Otherwise, again, it's something that's nice to think about, but we never actually talk about it. And so even on a feedback and evaluation, if I have a clearly articulated code of conduct, and I'm giving any feedback to anyone in the organization, it is based, it's against that benchmark of behavior.
Yeah.
So do you, right? How do you navigate conflict? How do you show up around feedback? How do you react to change, right? How do you approach your work, right? Paying great attention to detail and like, right? Producing high caliber work, taking ownership of mistakes. It's
right.
All of those pieces of how we want people to show up in our culture. And that's what we give people feedback around.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, training and development. It's like, if you say, we navigate conflict in a really productive way, making other people feel listened to and looking for mutually beneficial resolutions. Let's say that's part of your culture. Chances are your people coming in off the street that you're hiring don't necessarily have the capacity to do that. So in your training and development initiatives, you're providing people with nonviolent communication training.
Mm-hmm.
You are right. You use that culture to also inform what kind of training and development do we want to give to people. If you say that diversity and inclusion is important, then we have conversations about what does that mean in this organization? You're training people and giving them mindsets and tools so that they can actually live that culture.
Right.
And the areas of opportunity for where they don't have those skills naturally, that's what we identify as like, we need to provide training and development in these areas so that we can live our culture effectively. So that's how it's done in a nutshell. That's how you really, truly, tangibly approach culture. And that those conversations, guiding teams, working with them through those conversations like that. That is, I love doing that.
Yeah.
You know, organizations that I've worked with over for many times over years and come back to them now and have conversations about what they're experiencing. And it's like, it's just night and day,
mm-hmm.
like organizations that have totally embraced that. Right. And completely turned
changed
things around.
Everything.
Yeah. Just changing the way that they approach and think about culture and people.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to see the impact that has to do it that way, right? And these are your people. This is like, we have a strategy and we put money into everything, into sales and marketing and da da, but it's like, what about your people?
Yeah.
And I think knowing how to do that, but to treat culture like a strategic priority and have the tools to know how to tangibly do it and execute it. So it's not just buzzwords. It's not just, you know,
nice to
have stuff. No, none of that. And it doesn't have to be, you know, and that, it doesn't mean that it's punitive. It doesn't mean that we're going around like prison wardens. It's about commitment. It's about how do we show up together and right, gather input from people, ask for feedback. It's all of those things. It's very positive,
mm-hmm.
but there's right. There's also the piece that we have to be accountable to that. And when organizations, when we say, well, holding people accountable, you hear that a lot. And my question is always to what? Hold them accountable to what?
Ah.
A clearly defined culture.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And ground rules and code of conduct. That's what we hold people accountable to.
Yeah.
And we integrate it. And so that it, I could never shut up about this topic. I love it. This is
I heard you say so many things in that talk. All you've just inhaled, but you've now exhaled. Like it just came right out of you. So I know that this is something that you're very passionate about, right? One of the things that you spoke about there, which I think a lot of organizations, as you rightly said, do not have like within their organization is that code of conduct. I think a lot of people have this, we have a company policy, right? We have a vision, we have the mission or whatever, but we don't have this code of conduct. Like in all my years of working with organizations, I think I've only worked with two organizations that have ever felt the importance of having a code of conduct, first of all. But that document is key to your success in terms of building a company with a great culture.
Yes.
Why do you think that people miss that part, though, Galen?
It's just not known. it's just not understood. It's not collectively understood by business leaders and people in HR that like, that's how you do it. That is how you, right? That's how you impact people's behavior.
Yeah.
That you get clear. And like the reason why it's not done, I don't know, because to me, it seems very obvious.
Yeah.
It seems very simple, very obvious. I'm like, how, if you're talking about how people show up together, why don't you have that? And why it feels acceptable to people to just be like, well, let's create a list of values and think that people live by those values. It's like, I don't know. It's not deep enough. It's not enough. And I don't know why people don't understand this the same way, to be like, it has to be clear. And perfect example for anyone, especially in HR, that's ever had to have a conversation about someone's behavior or their performance. It's this moving target. You have to sit down and be like, well, your behavior, your performance, da da da. And you know, there's always this kind of like, are you picking on me? Are they singling me out? Mm-hmm. Right? It's like, I don't see it that way. It's always so much struggle and tension there.
Yeah.
And if you were having to have those conversations with people against a benchmark of a very clearly articulated code of conduct, those conversations become so simple, right? Yep. This behavior of this gossip, or like the way that you did this or give this feedback, or right? Like that is out of alignment with our culture. And so and like if this continues, your job is at stake. Like that's not acceptable here. Mm-hmm. How do we get you to where you need to be, right? And having those coaching conversations to be like, from day one, every like you're hiring and onboarding, all coaching and feedback that you get, training and development, all these things are based around how you already understand from day one how you're expected to show up here, and how what we're all held accountable to here, and anything outside of that behavior doesn't fly. And like, it's become so much more simple. No one can say, you're just picking on me. I'm like,
exactly.
I don't think so. I'm held as accountable to this as you are. Right. Yep. And like, it's very clear. And so I think that like, make your job easier as an HR person, as a business leader, by creating a set of ground rules.
Yeah.
How do we show up here? And when any time that, right. And if we cannot allow anything to exist outside of that bubble, right. Outside of that conduct, because if you allow it, right, and I say this all the time, it's like what you allow, you endorse.
Yeah.
When you allow poor performance,
people can only do what you allow them to do.
Of course. And the second you say that does not fly here, and you prove it, it's done. And you do that consistently, and mm-hmm. 3 months, 6 months from now, nobody would dream about doing that in this organization, because they know there are consequences to that. Right. And it doesn't have to be so punitive, so negative, you're going to get fired. But at some point, people understand we do not badmouth or gossip other people in this organization. We don't. It's not done here. Right. And if somebody comes to me to do it, I can be like, time out, pause, not here.
Yeah.
That conversation needs to happen with that person, not here, right?
Yes.
When you create something consistently that people will hold themselves and each other accountable to, when a leader is not in the room, that's what you have to create.
Yeah.
And you can't do that with a list of values and a mission statement. It just doesn't do it. It doesn't cut it. Respect mm-hmm. doesn't mean anything to anyone, right? Truly, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And look in organizations.
Right.
It doesn't
You're
impact
right.
people's behavior. They say integrity. The person in your organization who's embezzling from you would stand up and say that they're full of integrity. Like, people love to believe things about themselves. It's just, right? There's a disconnect between this is a behavior, this is an idea, this is a concept.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes.
Yeah, like I said. So what are you reading, watching, listening to right now that you think that would really benefit other HR professionals as they develop and grow in their careers?
Huh, good question. Let's see. One of the things that we're doing right now, I guess I've got a couple of resources that I always love to tout and share if people don't know about.
Okay.
One thing that we're doing personally right now, the book Traction. Are you familiar with that book?
I am not.
It's fantastic, especially if you are an entrepreneur. But it's it's a system. It's the entrepreneurial organizational system. That book is kind of like, here's how to run a business in terms of project management, making sure the right people are in the right seats, just evaluating productivity. And it's really great. It's comprehensive, especially for someone like me who is, as a business leader, I am a creative, I'm a visionary, I'm a strategic thinker. I'm
right.
not a like in the weeds kind of stuff. And so my greatest strengths are also my greatest faults.
Right.
And so that's been a really awesome way to sort of like shore up how we run this business and mm-hmm. as an organization. So I think that's a really, really great resource and tool of how you think about how you're running your organization in a way that's efficient and effective. The other one is not something I'm reading right now, but it's probably my favorite book to recommend to every human being on the planet, which is the book Fierce Conversations by Susan Scott. I love that book. It is amazing. I think of, you know, leaders especially, but I think for all human beings, one of the greatest skills that you can gain and acquire in your life is the ability to have challenging conversations, have courageous, really, you know, really honest, very transparent, very collaborative conversations that are challenging with other human beings, whether you are that's as a colleague, as a leader, as a friend, as a partner in a romantic relationship. I think the ability to navigate difficult conversations is so crucial to your success and like just the health and strength of the relationships in your life. I think that every person on the planet should read that book. It's, you know, self-development and like, and not in terms of, when I think of self-development, I think of it in terms of building skills. And I think that it's for people to always be hungry, especially if you are a leader of other people. It's like recognizing your areas of opportunity to grow and improve. And like, what are you, you know, whether that's feedback or difficult conversations, navigating conflict, right? Just whatever it is, I think be continually seeking out and learning and building your skill set in those areas, I think are so important, right? Clarity of communication, just those types of things. They're so important. So I love that book. If you haven't read that book, read it. It's phenomenal. It's great. And I know there's a lot of books. There's a lot of resources out there, but that one is...
That one's your number one.
I love it. I think everybody should read it. It's so important.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing those. I will share the links in the comments when we release this episode. For sure, for sure, for sure. Thank you for sharing that. So let me ask you this. What is the biggest misconception about HR that people have that you want to set the record straight on right now? That one thing that really bothers you that people misunderstand about HR professionals?
Good. Okay. I want to give an answer. I don't want to alienate your HR audience, but here's what I see and what I hear out there. I think this isn't just a misconception outside of HR. I think it's also inside HR. That is that, like, I know one of the tensions that exists in HR is that you are there to support the organization, right? And what they're trying to do. But I think that HR needs to be there to support people first. And I know that there's a tension between, are you supporting the organization and moving what the organization needs forward or people? And I think that, like, it's people. And so many times I hear about HR only comes to us when we're in trouble, that they're useless. If we have a problem with someone, they don't handle it well. And I'm not saying all HR is bad or that they're like that at all. I know phenomenal HR people that are just like champions of human beings, and they're amazing and they're skilled. But I think the biggest misconception is that HR is here to like make sure we don't get sued, right? And to fire people. Yeah. And like, that is garbage. That's garbage. Yeah. And I, for organizations, the way you think about HR is like, when I see HR departments that are effective, it's like you are training people that are in your HR department, for example, to be able to navigate conflict between two people, to mediate a conversation, to sit two people down in the same room and know how to walk them through the conversation to mediate that conflict, right? And to like find resolution. That is a skill. Anyone in HR needs to know how to do that. And if you have an HR department in your organization and they don't have the capacity to do that, you need to provide that training.
Yeah.
And I think organizations need to give more support to HR. They need to invest in HR development. They need to invest in like building the skills and capacity of your HR department to have challenging conversations, to give feedback effectively, to navigate conflict. HR supports every function of an organization. It's like, who supports HR?
Thank you.
Yes. Organizations need to invest money in HR people. They don't know everything. They don't have all the answers to every single thing in the world. They can't fix everything in the world. You need to invest in their development, in their growth, in their skill sets. Like, absolutely. And HR needs to be they need to be seen by employees as positive. If HR calls you and they're like, I want to set up an appointment. I want to come in next week, you know, for 30 minutes to have a conversation. Most people would be terrified of that conversation.
Yeah.
That's doing HR wrong. I think that HR needs to be in a space of supporting people, going on a regular basis and saying, hey, How's this experience? How are you doing? How can I show up for you better? How can your leader show up for you better? And like, we just, I think the HR needs to be torn apart and reframed to be like, we have the capacity to help people navigate the challenges of being humans in workplaces together in an effective way. So the HR for employees is a partner. They're a safe place to go and share things, to build skills. And I realize that depending on the size of the organization, depending on what you're dealing with, right, the circumstances and context, that's not always possible. But I think HR needs to be that function that like employees need to trust them inherently, and they need to be somewhere they can go where these people have skills to help them deal with the things that are just challenging in terms of being humans. So, and leadership organizations need to put HR at the table, need to listen to them, need to invest in them and support them. So, you know, there's a lot of different pieces, but that is it. HR is so important. It's so important because you get people that come into your organization and they don't know how to navigate conflict, right? It's, if you have a personality problem with somebody else's organization, how can you solve that? And I think that like, to be looking at, you know, that's just one example of how HR can be more supportive. But I think, you know, to be really, really thinking about comprehensively employee experience, what can HR bring to the table that's so valuable, and make sure that you are training and developing your HR department and your HR partners to have those skills, to have that capacity, to have that empower them. Yes. So I'll stop talking. Those are my thoughts. So much.
Like, you have just preached to the choir. Like, I could hear all of the audience going, yes. And they're quickly looking to find you so they can connect with you on every platform possible. I could not agree with you more. Like, everything that you have said there is so key to the success of an organization. If they really value their people in HR, then they're going to make the success there for sure. So we were talking about the importance of recognizing that HR plays a very key role in the organization. And I think that you said it very, very well. So I want to thank you for that. I'm not even going to add to it because I think you're preaching to the entire choir who's listening to this podcast today. We could do a part. We definitely are going to need to do a part two, Galen and I. I could see a part two in our future for sure. Thank you so much for sharing all of these nuggets with us today. Like, I really appreciate it. I'm sure that our audience does as well. And like, I have so many takeaways, so many notes that I have made here. And like, I know for sure a second conversation needs to be had.
Awesome.
You're in.
Awesome.
Can you tell our amazing audience where they can find you on social media?
Sure.
I mean, you can do it.
Sure. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn. Put a lot of content out on LinkedIn, so that's a great place to connect with me or follow. My website is shiftyes.com. So I have every week I put out a weekly video every Tuesday morning called The Culture Drop. Yeah. And that is one video. It's about 5 minutes long, different topics around leadership, communication, culture, et cetera. Yeah. So that people can sign up for that on my website as well, the Culture Drop email. It's not spammy. There's no paid version. It's just one free video once a week. I look forward to it. Yeah, it's not spammy. So that's a great way. I've got a book coming out. I'm working on a book. You know, TBD in terms of like release date. If you sign up for the mailing list, like, you will certainly be notified when that's happening. But
tell us about what your book is called and what it's about.
It's about culture. So it's about a lot of that conversation. So like that. Of what basically we just talked about is like, how do you really do that in a really effective, comprehensive way? So it's the first of like three books that I have in the pipeline. The final title for that one is like still hush hush. The second, I'm writing a book called Dear Boss, You're a Shitty Leader. That one's almost done too. I'm coming out. So I've got a bunch of stuff in the work. So stay tuned for those things. But a lot of things. Oh, the other place is YouTube. So if people are on YouTube, you can subscribe to my YouTube channel. I put out a ton of free content on YouTube as well. That's useful. So those are the different places and ways. We're always developing and creating other things. The virtual training, we're coming out with virtual like courses around career development and leadership and different things that I talk about too. So basically connecting on my mailing list is the best way to sort of keep informed. Yeah. And our social media stuff, we put stuff out a lot. I probably talked too long. You're like, how can people find you on social media? And then I talked for 10 minutes. But, And I love it. I love if people want to reach out and connect or send me a DM or talk about anything about leadership or teams or each. Like, I love this stuff so much. So if people want questions,
you actually respond.
Yeah, it's good. So, and you know, so that people know too, because I think some people ask, is like, this is what I do. So
yeah,
I go in and work with teams for a half day, you know, whatever ongoing basis around developing culture. And I'm launching something next year that I'm really excited about. That's kind of a, you know, that work that I do walking teams through culture, but also kind of doubling as a mastermind group. So I'm going to get a group of like six or eight organizations to do that at the same time. So they have access to each other and some of that conversation. So we'll connect to be like, what are you guys experiencing? What are you trying? What that's working? So that as they go through that in their own organizations, we can come together. So it's coaching from me and also that. So we've got stuff in the works that I'm excited about.
Nice. So when anyone is asking, what do you do? They shouldn't be saying like, what do you do all day? Like, you just in this entire podcast told everyone what you do all day. And it is a lot. And
it's a lot.
Deep respect for you, my friend. With that being said, you have survived your time in the sun. And I want to thank you so much for being here today. I am looking forward to releasing this episode, but I'm also looking forward to part two.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's so lovely to connect. I think you're wonderful. So thank you. I hope that people, you know, find a lot of value in some of these things. So it's good stuff. These are important conversations. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for joining us in the sound booth today. I hope that you found this information from this episode useful. You can find me on all social media platforms at I Am Julie Turney. That's I-A-M Julie Turney. And you can find this episode or this show on most digital platforms, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, you name it, we're there. Thanks to Anchor FM and Rock Solid Entertainment for helping me to put this content together for you. And I will see you again in the next Sound Off.